Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to eBible Fellowship's online gathering that we have each Sunday afternoon. And today we are going to take a look at Isaiah chapter 24, and this will be study number 10. I'm going to read from verse 11 of that chapter. There is a crying for wine in the streets. All joy is darkened. The mirth of the land is gone. And the city is left desolation, and the gate is smitten with destruction. When thus it shall be in the midst of the land, among the people, there shall be as the shaking of an olive tree, and as the gleaning grapes when the vintage is done. They shall lift up their voice, they shall sing for the majesty of Jehovah, they shall cry aloud from the sea. Wherefore, glorify ye Jehovah in the fires, even the name of Jehovah, God of Israel, in the isles of the sea. And I'll stop reading there. Now, our last study, we were looking at the end of verse 11, where it says, all joy is darkened, the mirth of the land is gone. And I just want to quickly comment on that last phrase, the mirth of the land is gone. It's really in keeping with the previous verses, as we've seen God refer back in verse 8, the mirth of tabrets or timbrels ceaseth. The noise of them that rejoice endeth. The joy of the heart ceaseth. So mirth, joy, rejoicing. We just read in verse 11, all joy is darkened. It is a complete and total removal of joyfulness and of all the rejoicing that accompanies it. And this is because the Bible speaks of there being joy in heaven over one sinner that repents. And when we come to the day of judgment, as Isaiah 24 is describing, and which we are now in, we find that God's judgment on the world is to put out the light of the gospel immediately after the tribulation. The sun is darkened. We're to put out the candlestick, the light of the candlestick, to remove the voice of the bridegroom and of the bride, to remove joy from the earth in that sense that the Lord has completed his salvation plan and no longer is saving in the world. God is not actively sending forth the gospel in order to seek out sinners to become saved. That has been already accomplished. The work is done. God's people have done the will of God in that sense, and now there is a need of patience on their part, on the people of God's part, as we wait for the Lord to now finish the rest of his purposes. And they're manifold to test the believers, to try to make white unto the end, and to have them make manifest that they were in Christ, experiencing the salvation of God, and they experienced judgment in him before the foundation of the world. And of course, God's purpose to bring about the judgment of mankind, to punish them for their sin. And so this is not a joyful time. It's a grievous time, but it is a necessary time. It is not without purpose. It is not just vanity. God has very specific purposes for everything that he is doing. And then, of course, it concludes, the mirth of the land is gone. And once again, the word land is the same word that's been translated as earth so many times in this same chapter. The mirth of the earth is gone. It has left. The word gone is the same word that we find in 1 Samuel 4. In 1 Samuel 4, God has brought judgment upon Shiloh and Israel of that day. And it was just a terrible judgment. Israel's army was defeated. They lost many thousands of men in battle. The house of Eli was greatly destroyed as Hophni and Phinehas, the sons of Eli, were slain. Eli himself would die on the same day, falling over backwards and breaking his neck. And he fell over backwards because he received the news that the Ark of the Covenant, the Ark of God, was taken forcibly out of the hands of Israel and into the hands of the Philistines. The holy Ark of God was captured. And on top of all this, Phinehas had a wife who was with child and was about to deliver, and she hears the news that her husband is dead and her father-in-law is dead, that Israel has been defeated by their enemy. The ark has been taken, and now she's going to deliver a baby. She travails, and she dies during childbirth, and yet she was able to name the child Ichabod. And the reason she named the boy Ichabod is stated in verse 21 of 1 Samuel 4. She named the child Ichabod, saying, "The glory is departed from Israel, because the ark of God was taken, and because of her father-in-law and her husband." And she said, "The glory is departed from Israel, for the ark of God is taken." And the word departed is the same word gone that we find in Isaiah 24 and verse 11. The mirth of the earth is departed. And this word is used other places other than 1 Samuel 4. But 1 Samuel 4 is very fitting because it is picturing the departure of God himself from his people, Israel. And that typifies what God did when he began the judgment process, and judgment began at the house of God. The judgment was that God left his people. He forsook them. He came out of the midst of the congregations. And remember, we're learning it's the same cup. It's the same cup when the judgment expands and widens and now includes the whole earth. Since May 21, prior to May 21, for 23 years, it was exclusively on the church world, which numbered a great many, about 2 billion people. But once May 21 came, and after, the judgment expanded to include all unsaved people in the earth. And the same cup that was given to the corporate churches, the unsaved individuals within the congregations, is now given to all of the unsaved people in the world. And it begins with the departure of God from his salvation plan. He is no longer saving people because there's no way he could. Everyone to be saved has become saved. So from the world's perspective, all joy is darkened. The mirth of the earth is departed as God has concluded his glorious and great salvation plan, and he has finished it. Well, let's go on into verse 12 in Isaiah 24, where it says, "In the city is left desolation, and the gate is smitten with destruction." Now, we saw back in verse 10 that Isaiah, writing under inspiration of God, made reference to the city of confusion is broken down. Now, these two words, both translated as city in our English, are different Hebrew words, but they're pointing to the same thing spiritually. It is the city which represents the kingdom of Satan, or the kingdom of darkness. Babylon is that city. That's how God views the world under Satan's rule, especially during the Great Tribulation. And he says this: in the city is left desolation. We find similar language of desolation in many places, but let's go to Isaiah chapter 13. in Isaiah 13, it says, I'll begin reading in verse 9, Behold, the day of Jehovah cometh cruel, both with wrath and fierce anger, to lay the land desolate, and he shall destroy the sinners thereof out of it. And again, here in Isaiah 13, verse 9, the word land is that same Hebrew word that's translated as earth many times. And this is picturing the judgment that will come on the earth, just like Isaiah 24 is. And then it says in the following verses, For the stars of heaven and the constellations thereof shall not give their light. The sun shall be darkened in his going forth, and the moon shall not cause her light to shine. And I will punish the world for their evil, and the wicked for their iniquity. And I will cause the arrogancy of the proud to cease, and will lay low the haughtiness of the terrible. Well, it's pretty clear as we read Isaiah 13, and most, I think, would agree, at least most who understand how God speaks of Judgment Day in the Bible, that the day of Jehovah mentioned in Isaiah 13:9, along with the references to the stars not giving light and the sun being darkened and the moon shall not cause her light to shine. And then finally with the statement, I will punish the world for their evil. It is pretty clear that Isaiah 13 is focusing in on Judgment Day. Now some would say, it would be the last day, the very end of the world. Well, it is Judgment Day for sure. And the reference to the stars, the sun, and the moon identifies with Matthew 24:29 and other verses which speak of the events that take place immediately after the tribulation. So we can see how this fits the language of the Bible concerning the judgment on the world. Not the judgment on the church, but the judgment on the world. Just as Isaiah 24 is detailing the wrath of God upon the inhabitants of the earth, not just the inhabitants of the churches. And this is necessary and good for us to stress, to make sure that we understand this, because, you know, there has been some confusion concerning Babylon in the Bible. How are we to understand Babylon? After all, doesn't Babylon represent the churches? And when we read that in Revelation 18, God says, Come out of her, my people. Isn't that a command to come out of the churches? And so on. But we're seeing other verses which speak of Babylon's fall. And Babylon fell after 70 years. And that 70-year period from 609 B.C. until 539 B.C. was a historical type of the Great Tribulation. Our Great Tribulation, which lasted 23 years from May 21, 1988 through May 21, 2011. And so since Babylon fell after the 70-year period, which typifies the Great Tribulation, and God is very clear about that, that's when the Medes and Persians took the kingdom, and then wouldn't Babylon's fall identify with the end of the Great Tribulation? And that would be the beginning of Judgment Day on May 21. So how are we to understand it with this seemingly contradictory language? On one hand, Babylon seems to represent the world. On the other hand, Babylon seems to represent the church. Well, let's take a closer look at Isaiah 13, which we've just seen. The language is unmistakably speaking of the judgment on the world. And let's go and take a look at the beginning. In Isaiah 13, verse 1, it says there, The burden of Babylon, which Isaiah the son of Amoz did see. So he opens up the chapter by stating that this will deal with, it will concern the burden of Babylon. And then it goes on to give various information, speaking of the day of Jehovah in verse 6. And then we read verses 9 through 11, where it's talking about punishing the world. Well, what happened to Babylon? Well, you see, Babylon is the world. It is the world. So it is a natural transition to refer to Babylon and then to speak of punishing the world. If we go to verse 13, I'm going to read several verses from verse 13 of Isaiah chapter 13. Therefore, I will shake the heavens, and the earth shall remove out of her place, in the wrath of Jehovah of hosts and in the day of his fierce anger. Again, continuing with the very consistent focus on the judgment at the end of the world. And it shall be as the chaste roe, and as a sheep that no man taketh up. They shall every man turn to his own people, and flee every one into his own land. Every one that is found shall be thrust through, and every one that is joined unto them shall fall by the sword. Their children also shall be dashed to pieces before their eyes. Their houses shall be spoiled, and their wives ravished. Behold, I will stir up the Medes against them, which shall not regard silver, and as for gold, they shall not delight in it. Now, we know that Isaiah 13 context in verse 1 began with Babylon, and now God is referencing the Medes. And the Medes are that nation that God used to destroy Babylon. We'll come back here, but let's go to Daniel chapter 5, and the king of Babylon, this is in the year 539 B.C., the king of Babylon saw writing on the wall that he was very disturbed by, to the point his knees were shaking together, and Daniel was called in order to interpret the writing and to reveal to the king what it meant. And it says in Daniel 5, verse 25, and this is the writing that was written, many, Tekel Upharsin. This is the interpretation of the thing. Mene, God has numbered thy kingdom and finished it. Tekel, thou art weighed in the balances and art found wanting. Perez, thy kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and Persians. Then commanded Belshazzar, and they clothed Daniel with scarlet and put a chain of gold about his neck, and made a proclamation concerning him that he should be the third ruler in the kingdom. In that night was Belshazzar, the king of the Chaldeans, slain, and Darius the Median took the kingdom, being about 62 years old. Darius is the same as Cyrus the Persian. He had these two titles, Darius the Mede and Cyrus the Persian, but he's the same man, and he typifies Christ. In Isaiah 45, I think, God speaks of Cyrus and says that he is my anointed one, and that's the word Messiah. So we find historically that after the 70-year period was completed, and it was the year 539 B.C., that Daniel interpreted writing that came from God that was unknown, and it was then revealed to the king of Babylon and to all that were in presence at that party that the Medes and Persians would take his kingdom. And that very night, it happened. The Medes and the Persians marched into Babylon, right into the palace, and took the kingdom and slew King Belshazzar, the king of Babylon. And that pictures Christ coming as a thief in the night. The Babylonians were caught completely off guard. They were having a party, drinking wine. All the lords, apparently their watchmen, were sound asleep or not doing their job very well to allow a huge host, undoubtedly, of the Medes and the Persians to just enter into their city so quietly and without any advance warning. So that pictures the end of the Great Tribulation, and it teaches us that Christ came as a thief on the night on May 21 of 2011 when he brought judgment upon the world at the very end of the Great Tribulation, just as Cyrus came at the very end of the 70-year period. We also learn, as the king of Babylon was slain, so too was Satan put down from his position of authority that God had given him during his rule, which took place throughout the 23-year Great Tribulation period. And so when we read in Isaiah 13 that I will stir up the Medes against them, which shall not regard silver, it is once again identifying what we're reading in Isaiah chapter 13 with the destruction of Babylon. And it goes on to say in verse 18, their bows also shall dash the young men to pieces, and they shall have no pity on the fruit of the womb. Their eyes shall not spare children. And Babylon, the glory of kingdoms, the beauty of the Chaldees' excellency, shall be as when God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah. It shall never be inhabited, neither shall it be dwelt in from generation to generation, neither shall the Arabian pitch tent there, neither shall the shepherds make their fold there. Once again, the language very specifically of Babylon is picked up, letting us know that throughout the chapter 13, it has always been focused on Babylon. Therefore, when God says, I will punish the world for their evil and the wicked for their iniquity, it is describing the judgment upon Babylon. There's no mistaking it. It's very clear that Babylon in the Bible is a figure of the world. Now, of course, within the kingdom of Babylon is the church, because it was the Babylonians that came against Jerusalem. It was the king of Babylon that was victorious against the people of Judah and the king of Judah. And he conquered them. He took them captive. And that just teaches us that during the Great Tribulation, Satan was victorious over the churches. He had great authority in his rule, and God gave it to him. And since the church was overcome by him, it became part of his kingdom, part of the world. And so in that sense, yes, Babylon also represents the church. Notice something else here in Isaiah 13, verse 21. But wild beasts of the desert shall lie there, and their houses shall be full of doleful creatures, and owls shall dwell there, and satyrs shall dance there, and the wild beasts of the island shall cry in their desolate houses, and dragons in their pleasant places. And her time is near to come, and her days shall not be prolonged. So here God speaks of owls shall dwell there, and an owl is an unclean bird. And that also relates to Isaiah 34. Again, Isaiah 34 is another chapter in which God is describing his judgment on the world. And it says, for instance, in verse 2, for the indignation of Jehovah is upon all nations, and his fury upon all their armies. He has utterly destroyed them. He has delivered them to the slaughter. And verse 4, and all the host shall be dissolved, and the heavens shall be rolled together as a scroll, and all their hosts shall fall down, as the leaf falleth off from the vine, and as the falling fig from the fig tree. You know, these chapters have been commented on repeatedly throughout the ages by very good theologians, and God's people have recognized that these chapters have dealt with Judgment Day. For instance, in verse 8 of Isaiah 34, for it is the day of Jehovah's vengeance and the year of recompenses for the controversy of Zion. and the streams thereof shall be turned into pitch, and the dust thereof into brimstone, and the land thereof shall become burning pitch. It shall not be quenched night nor day. The smoke thereof shall go up forever from generation to generation. It shall lie waste. None shall pass through it forever and ever. It speaks for itself. The language is referring to the end of the world, the judgment upon the world, which comes at judgment day. But then look at verse 11 of Isaiah 34. And I'll read actually verses 11 through 15. But the cormorant and the bittern shall possess it, the owl also and the raven shall dwell in it, just as we read in Isaiah 13 about the owl. And he shall stretch out upon it the line of confusion and the stones of emptiness. They shall call the nobles thereof to the kingdom, but none shall be there, and all her princes shall be nothing. And thorns shall come up in her palaces, nettles and brambles in the fortresses thereof. And it shall be a habitation of dragons and a court for owls. The wild beasts of the desert shall also meet with the wild beasts of the island. And the satyr shall cry to his fellow. The screech owl also shall rest there and find for herself a place of rest. There shall the great owl make her nest and lay and hatch and gather under her shadow. There shall the vultures also be gathered, every one with her mate. So here, with even more detail, God speaks of judgment day, and then he mysteriously begins referring to unclean birds, owls and ravens and vultures, that will dwell there, that will possess it. And we really wonder, what is God talking about? This is the end of the world. Why is he referring to unclean birds? And if we didn't know what he has done in bringing about a spiritual judgment on the world, beginning on May 21 and continuing up until today, whose duration at this point we don't know, if we didn't realize this, we would never be able to understand it. But it's referring to a judgment day that takes place, and then language of wreaking havoc in Isaiah 13 upon the Babylonians by the Medes and the Persians, and language of unclean birds continuing to dwell in the place that we had thought would be utterly obliterated. It will be gone since fire and brimstone has fallen upon it. But no, it's all just spiritual language. It's language indicating the wrath of God. Just as God indicated his wrath upon the church, so too the language on the world is not to be taken literally. No, at the very end of the judgment on the world, God will literally, physically destroy all things. But at the beginning and throughout, up until that final time, the judgment is spiritual. So when we come to Revelation 18, and it says in verse 2, and he cried mightily with a strong voice, saying, Babylon the Great is fallen, is fallen. Now, remember, when did Babylon fall? After 70 years, which typifies the end of the Great Tribulation. We get into all kinds of trouble if we try to relate this to the church, as verse 4 speaks of coming out of her, and if we try to relate that to the command to come out of the church, we're off course, because Babylon fell at the end of the 70 years, which typifies the end of the Great Tribulation. And here it says, again, Babylon the Great is fallen, and is become the habitation of devils and the hold of every foul spirit and cage of every unclean and hateful bird. Now that relates to what we read in Isaiah 13 and Isaiah 34. As God described, he laid out the judgment on the world, and then mysteriously he made mention to owls and ravens and vultures dwelling in the place where he had brought his judgment. Well, now we understand it's referring to the world of our present day. God has brought about judgment on Satan, on his kingdom, typified by Babylon, that great city representative of all the unsaved on the earth. And even though God has begun the judgment process on them, they still exist. And so that's why we find this language of unclean animals and birds and things like that continuing to dwell in the land of Babylon. You know, there is a reason why we confused Babylon with the church. It's a very simple reason, and we did not have any ability to really understand it until now. And again, it goes back to Jeremiah 25 and the fact that God takes the cup of his wrath and he gives it to the city called by his name, Jerusalem or Judah, which represents the church. Judgment begins at the house of God. Then he takes the same cup and he says, now give it to all the nations to drink and they will surely drink. And they drink the very same cup. So we would expect very similar language to describe God's judgment on the world as he used to describe his judgment on the church. And that's why when we find in the book of Jeremiah almost identical verses referring to Babylon and referring to Jerusalem, we made the mistake of assuming it was referring to the same spiritual thing, that is the church. For instance, let's go to Jeremiah chapter 51, Jeremiah 51 and verse 37, where it says, "And Babylon shall become heaps, a dwelling place for dragons, an astonishment and a hissing without an inhabitant." Now, let's compare Jeremiah 9 in verse 11. "And I will make Jerusalem heaps and a den of dragons. And I will make the cities of Judah desolate without an inhabitant." And the mistake was, well, obviously, going back prior to May 21, as we looked at this, it didn't make any sense that God would use identical language concerning Babylon, if Babylon represented the world, as he did upon Jerusalem or Judah, since Jerusalem and Judah represented the church. And we knew, we thought, that God has a different plan of judgment for the world. He's going to violently and physically destroy the earth. There would be a great earthquake, and mankind's suffering would be very visible and very evident. And then, finally, at the end, God would destroy the unsaved people of the world after making a point of showing his power and might and wrath to them so that they could all see it very outwardly and visibly. So since these verses of Jeremiah 51:37 and Jeremiah 9:11 use almost identical language, therefore, we know this language, when applied to Jerusalem, is all spiritual, and therefore it must be that Babylon represents the church also. And it is spiritual language, once again describing judgment on the church. But that was incorrect. Incorrect. In Jeremiah 7, it says in verse 34, "Then will I cause to cease from the cities of Judah and from the streets of Jerusalem, the voice of mirth and the voice of gladness, the voice of the bridegroom and the voice of the bride, for the land shall be desolate." Spiritually, that's what desolation is. And we recognize what these things are referring to when God says he will cause to cease the voice of mirth, gladness, the bridegroom and the bride. Why, that's none other than the Lord Jesus Christ himself and the body of believers and the gospel. It's the gospel that God is causing to cease from the streets of Jerusalem. We understand it perfectly. We were very clear. We had no questions about this language, and actually we were correct. It is referring to God leaving the church, abandoning them without salvation. They have no light of the gospel. They have no power of the word of God, since the voice of Christ has ceased, in the sense that God will not use his word to spark life, to create a new heart in anyone ever again within the congregations. And we saw that, and we understood it's all spiritual. It's all referring to the judgment on the church. Well, now in Revelation 18, we saw the same language, and we may have misapplied it, because it says in Revelation 18, I'll start reading in verse 19, and they cast dust on their heads and cried, weeping and wailing, saying, "Alas, alas, that great city, wherein were made rich all that had ships in the sea, by reason of her costliness, for in 1 hour is she made desolate. Rejoice over her, thou heaven, and ye holy apostles and prophets, for God has avenged you on her." And a mighty angel took up a stone like a great millstone, and cast it into the sea, saying, "Thus with violence shall that great city Babylon be thrown down, and shall be found no more at all. And the voice of harpers, and musicians, and of pipers, and trumpeters, shall be heard no more at all in thee. And no craftsman of whatsoever craft he be shall be found any more in thee. And the sound of a millstone shall be heard no more at all in thee. And the light of a candle shall shine no more at all in thee. And the voice of the bridegroom and of the bride shall be heard no more at all in thee. For thy merchants were the great men of the earth. For by thy sorceries were all nations deceived. And in her was found the blood of prophets and of saints and of all that were slain upon the earth." So here God is referring to the very same thing that he did in Jeremiah 7 when he was speaking of Jerusalem and Judah, the removal of the voice of the bridegroom and of the bride, and many other things he's added. So it cannot be mistaken that he's referring to the taking away of the gospel. But you see, we've been a little confused about Babylon, and we haven't properly understood, and we need to understand this. Babylon is referring to the judgment on the world. The beginning of Revelation 18 tells us that when it sets the context as Babylon is fallen. And when it says that it's to hold a very unclean and hateful bird, that also identifies with Isaiah chapter 13 and 34, which again establishes the context as judgment day upon the world. You know, more than that, if we go back to the book of Jeremiah, and in the two very big chapters that God gives, which speak of the judgment of Babylon, the Lord makes mention of the reason why it's being judged. It says in Jeremiah 50 and verse 14, "Put yourselves in array against Babylon round about, all ye that bend the bow. Shoot at her, spare no arrows, for she has sinned against Jehovah. Shout against her round about. She has given her hand, her foundations are fallen, her walls are thrown down." Now here's the reason why Babylon is being judged. It's over in verse 28 of the same chapter. "The voice of them that flee and escape out of the land of Babylon, to declare in Zion the vengeance of Jehovah our God, the vengeance of his temple." It is the vengeance because of what they did. Just like historically, the Babylonians destroyed Jerusalem. They destroyed Judah. They destroyed the temple of God. They took the holy objects, the vessels of the temple, into Babylon. They took captive the people of God. Therefore, God, in vengeance, raised up the Medes and the Persians And at the end of the 70-year period, he brought that mighty nation against them, and they destroyed Babylon. It was the vengeance of the Lord's temple. And so, too, on May 21, 2011, at the end of the 23-year Great Tribulation, after God had raised up Satan by loosing him, and then Satan as the beast overcame the two witnesses, and he ascended into the congregations and took his seat as the man of sin. He stood there as the abomination of desolation, and the church was without the Spirit of God for 23 years. Well, yes, God did that. It was all at his bidding. Satan was acting as his servant in accomplishing the purpose and will of God. But God did not forget it. He held Satan and his kingdom responsible. They were guilty, even though God simply removed his hand of restraint in allowing these things to take place and allowing the church to be desolated by Satan's assault. Yet God still realized that they were a people called by his name. They were his representatives, and therefore he determined to bring vengeance, judgment against the ones that had done it. And so, therefore, on May 21, it began the day of vengeance upon Babylon, upon Satan and all the unsaved in his kingdom, the world. And this is the day of vengeance for what he has done. It says in Jeremiah 51 in verse 33, "For thus saith Jehovah of hosts, the God of Israel, the daughter of Babylon is like a threshing floor. It is time to thresh her yet a little while, and the time of her harvest shall come. Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, has devoured me. He has crushed me. He has made me an empty vessel. He has swallowed me up like a dragon. He has filled his belly with my delicates. He has cast me out. The violence done to me and to my flesh be upon Babylon, shall the inhabitant of Zion say, and my blood upon the inhabitants of Chaldea, shall Jerusalem say. Therefore, thus saith Jehovah, behold, I will plead thy cause and take vengeance for thee, and I will dry up her sea and make her springs dry. And Babylon shall become heaps, a dwelling place for dragons, an astonishment and a hissing without an inhabitant." The very same language, the identical language to what God has said about Jerusalem and Judah, because it is the same cup. We're seeing this in just numerous places, that God is verifying that this is his end time judgment plan, that it is a twofold process: judge the church, then judge the world, and finally, once the world is judged, it will be the completion of the judgment for all the unsaved, and all will then be accomplished. So Babylon represents the world. When we read, especially, "Babylon is fallen," we can know this is language indicating that God's judgment is upon the world after the Great Tribulation during this period of time. Well, let's just look at a couple of questions before we conclude. One is, well, what about the verse in Revelation 18:4 that says, "Come out of her, my people, lest you be partaker of her plagues and sins"? Well, that is a verse in which God is encouraging people to come out of the world. No, not to leave the world, but to come out of Babylon in the sense that a person would become saved. Just as the Lord encouraged people to enter in to a chamber. In Isaiah 26, verse 20, "Come, my people, enter thou into thy chambers and shut thy doors about thee. Hide thyself, as it were, for a little moment, until the indignation be overpassed. For behold, Jehovah cometh out of his place to punish, the inhabitants of the earth for their iniquity. And so God here is speaking to people, and this would have application in the days leading up to May 21. That's the only time when people could enter into the chambers of God and hide themselves through the salvation of God. And when the Bible speaks of hiding ourselves in chambers, it is not in any way imaginable referring to just closing up yourself from sharing anything from the Bible any further. A few people have gotten that very mistaken idea. It has nothing to do with that at all. It's referring to hiding ourselves in Christ through salvation, as it says in Colossians 3, verse 3, for you're dead and your life is hid with Christ in God. That is what the reference to hiding ourselves in the chambers is referring to. We would experience safety if we became saved. We would be hid from this terrible wrath of God at this point during this day. Yet God here is indicating that his people should take an action. Come, enter thou into thy chambers. Now we know we can't get ourselves saved. We could never of our own volition enter into the chambers or experience salvation by our own efforts. Yet it's a command to, just like come out of her, my people is a command, it's a command to take action and to become saved. And so as a result, we go to God and say, oh, Lord, I desire to be hid before the day of your fierce anger comes upon us. I am seeking you in the only way I can, by reading the Bible and praying and crying out for mercy. And if we're one of God's elect, then he would bring us into the safety of the chamber of his salvation. And so too, when God says, come out of her, my people. Let me read that verse in Revelation 18:4. And I heard another voice from heaven saying, come out of her, my people, that ye be not partakers of her sins, and that ye receive not of her plagues. Well, that's the same thing. To come out of Babylon is to come out of the kingdom of darkness. And the only way that can happen is if God translates us out of the kingdom of darkness and into the kingdom of his dear son. And it's all spiritual. It's all involving salvation. And again, we would cry out, oh, Lord, take me out of Babylon. And I'm sure not in those very words, but many did cry out in that way. Oh, Lord, please save me and deliver me from the kingdom of darkness, from the grips of Satan. And so that is what verse 4 is referring to. Now, it's interesting. It shows another relationship that God commanded his people. It is a fact to come out of the churches. We have that command in other places. We don't have to worry about Revelation 18:4 not being used to illustrate God's command to leave the church. We have God's command in Matthew 24, for instance. In Matthew 24, in verse 16, then let them which be in Judea flee into the mountains. Now that's the command to depart out of the church in another form. And also in Luke chapter 21, it says in verse 21, then let them which are in Judea flee to the mountains, and let them which are in the midst of it depart out, and let not them that are in the countries enter therein too. There is a very clear command, those in Judea depart out of it. And again, it's interesting. We have a command to flee Judah, and we have a very similar command to flee Babylon, just as the very similar verses in the book of Jeremiah, where God speaks of one thing concerning Judah or Jerusalem and and almost the identical thing concerning Babylon. Well, it's the same thing here, or the same answer. The reason is because the cup is so similar. There's a desperate need to come out of the churches during the Great Tribulation when the judgment was upon them. However, to obey that command, we could physically, literally, remove ourselves. There's no problem there. We could just come out of the church. But there's also a great need to come out of Babylon before God brings about that judgment, because once that judgment begins, then no one can leave. There's no more salvation. And that command must be obeyed in a spiritual sense, and God must do the performing of it by granting us his salvation, by bestowing his grace upon us so that we could depart from the world in a spiritual sense and experience the salvation of God. Well, we're going to stop here. I just wanted to go over this because there's been some questions about Babylon. And the way, of course, God wrote it, it is very mysterious. And he wrote it this way on purpose, by design. But let me just conclude in summary by stating this. Just three, and I'm sure there's more, main reasons why Babylon must represent the world. One, what we read in Isaiah chapter 13 and 34, where God speaks of Babylon and then very naturally speaks of the judgment on the world. Two, we read in Isaiah chapter 13 and 34 of judgment day, and then unclean birds in particular are referenced, and that identifies with Revelation 18, verse 2. And three, when we're reading Jeremiah 50 and 51 and the judgment upon Babylon, well, actually, there's four reasons. This will be three. The reason for the judgment is vengeance for the Lord's temple, meaning that they have already destroyed the Lord's temple, and so the judgment on Babylon must be that which comes after. And not during. It is after they have destroyed the Lord's temple, or after the Great Tribulation. And then the fourth thing is Babylon is fallen. And that completely identifies with the end of 70 years. And the 70-year period identifies with the Great Tribulation. So it is pointing us towards May 21, 2011. So we have to look at everything the Bible says, and if there's other verses out there, I haven't seen them that would show that Babylon is representing the church only. But thank you. We've come to the end of our study today. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll come back with our Sunday afternoon questions and answers.